You please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Tonight our 40-minute speaker is Donna B. from Mission Viejo.
Hi, my name is Donna Blue, and I am a recovering alcoholic. And I know only a few of you here, but I know every one of you here because I know your disease. We have the same exact disease. We did drink, we did get drunk, and we did incomprehensible demoralization, either internally or externally, as a result of our disease. So I am glad to be a worker among workers in this group of people. I've never been to this meeting, but it's a great meeting so far. Happy birthday to the birthday people. And if you're new here, just stay. Just stay. This is the easier, softer way. And the secret is working the steps. So with that, I was, I say, born again on March 22nd, 1986, because I got a life beyond my wildest dream starting that day, and I didn't know it. I was miserable for my first 5 years of sobriety. I was angry. I was full of rage. I broke out the windows of a fellowship in Berkeley. They told me to keep coming back. It was my first amends in this sobriety. It took me 6 years to get this sobriety. I went to AA meetings. Actually, since I was a little girl, I went to AA meetings because my parents, I had five stepdads growing up, and I had a drunk mother who just died 2 years ago from alcoholism, and my little sister at 35 years old died of alcoholism 13 years ago, and I didn't have to take a drink over neither one of those deaths. My dad just died 8 months ago, and I didn't have to take a drink, and that guy hung the stars in the sky for me, and it was a very difficult transition, but I made it one day at a time, and I leaned hard on AA members. I had people with me all the time. So I want to thank Paul for asking me to speak. I love you, Paul. Boy, I really do love that man. I moved to Laguna Beach right after. I was just like a couple of weeks after my mom died. I didn't have any place to live. And here I was in my 20s of sobriety, and I was scared to death. And I felt like a newcomer again, and I ended up working at a sober living in Laguna, I call it the castle, and because it was across the street from the beach, and, you know, Paul was kind of like my right hand, and that's what I want to tell you guys, newcomers, don't do it alone. I didn't do it alone, even with long-term sobriety, I didn't do it alone, and when I first moved to Laguna, I was like a newcomer because I'd never been sober in Laguna before. I didn't know those people, but I knew their disease. And so I knew what to do because I did it when I was new. The 90 and 90, I did that all over again. And it saved my life. I raised my hand like a newcomer and I spoke way too long like newcomers do. And, you know, I mean, it's just what we do. We all know that. Those of us who have been around a while, we know that newcomers talk too long. And what I was told when I was a newcomer is that if I'm talking too long in a meeting, it means I haven't talked to my sponsor enough. And it means I haven't been picking up the 3,000-pound phone. So if you're talking too long in meetings, just keep that in mind. I grew up in Orange County, and I grew up in a dysfunctional home. I actually, you know what? I drank for 26 years, and I got sober when I was 26. My mom was under the influence of alcohol for all four of her children's births. And I don't want to tell my mom's story, but that is, I end up kind of telling my mom's story because I am my mom's story. And that's a tough one. I didn't like that woman for a long time. For many, many years, I didn't like that woman. I thought that she was the demise of who I am. And now she is only the demise of who I was. She married her second husband, not my father, when I was 6 years old in Santa Ana, California. And his name was Whiskey Bill. He was a winner. He was a winner. He was a winner at the bar that we hung out at. And actually it was because of him that I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous because he got a DUI. like within months of my mom marrying him. And so we ended up having to go to those AA meetings. And these guys came to our house, and they looked like Mormons. They had the tie and the suit, and they were, you know, they just came up to our apartment, and they took them off to AA. And so, like, I spent my childhood either in the car outside of an AA meeting or in the car outside of a bar. That was my life. And, you know, and then my sister came along, and then my brother, 10 years later, was Whiskey Bill's son, is Whiskey Bill's son. And he just took a year in November? January. He took a year in January. Paul went with me to pick him up from jail, 3 months of jail, and we ended up in Mexico. We didn't. When you get down there, it says last exit to the U.S. or something, and I thought, oh, there's one more, because I'm alcoholic. There's always more, you know. So we go driving, and these guys are standing there with rifles, and I'm like, shit, Paul, I think we're in Mexico. So this guy opens this big gate, and he lets us through, and the guy at the little stand says, no, that gate never opens. And I'm looking at Paul. I go, he did open that gate, didn't he? You know, we got back in the U.S. and then the guy wanted our passports or our birth certificate. And I'm like, we didn't plan on coming to Mexico, sir. We're going to jail to pick up my brother. I think I shouldn't have said that. But, you know, you can see the jail from that thing, from the little kiosk. Well, we got there in time to pick him up. Anyway, so it's, you know, life is life when you are alcoholic. Sometimes it was fun and sometimes it wasn't so fun. And so I was 6 when my natural father left, and he left to move out of state to work in aerospace, and then Whiskey Bill moved in like a few weeks later, and then they got married, and, you know, that was the run of it. And the first night I remember Whiskey Bill sleeping in our apartment on Josephine Street in Santa Ana. And he molested us that first night in the bathtub. He put us in the bathtub. And that's where it started. And I ended up being a child prostitute from the age of 6 to 16. And so that's part of the reason I came in really pissed off and angry, because I had those memories when I got sober. And I think for those 6 years I was trying to get sober, I was shoving down those memories. So I couldn't get sober because I kept having to drink to try to shove those memories down, and I didn't want to admit. You know how we would admit we're alcoholic? Really, we accept that we're alcoholic and our lives are unmanageable. And I wasn't going to do that, because that meant I'd have to feel. And who in the heck wants to feel? That's why we drink, right? And the truth is all we want to be, we just want to be loved. Everybody in this room just wants to be loved. That's the simplicity of it. And in AA, when I came in, they said, let us love you till you can love yourself. And I thought, I don't want to be loved. That's scary. That's yucky. And I remember my first 90 days of sobriety, it hurt my skin to have women and men try to hug me, because I was so, what do you want? You know, I didn't want that, because I thought that that is what a hug meant. If there was any intimacy at all, it just meant that I was going to get hurt. And that was embedded in me. And you're a worthless piece of shit, and you'll be nothing but a prostitute the rest of your life. That was embedded in me. And I've proved them wrong. They will not win. They will not win as long as I stay sober. And I work the steps, and I work with newcomers, and I put my hand out to the men and women still suffering in this room, whether they're sober or not. There's a lot of wet people that come to meetings. I was one of them. Wet meaning we drank before the meeting, because we didn't have the courage to come in. So if you're here tonight, you had the courage to come into an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. You have the courage to listen. Not only to listen for the message, but to hear it. To really let it soak into your soul. I didn't want that when I was a newcomer. So if you said, the hell with that just now in your head, that's okay. And if you don't remember anything that I say tonight, that's okay. It's really okay. However you get to these rooms, just come to meetings and don't drink in between. And I didn't mean to stay sober this long. This was not my intention. I really wanted to get my, you know, all my stuff, my ducks in a row, and then I was going to go out and do my life. Thank you very much. I was going to do 1 year. And I got to that 1 year, and I was working, I think maybe the fifth or sixth step at my first year, and I thought, well, maybe there's something to this. So I upped for another year. I anteed up. And I got an awakening of some kind, and I thought, well, maybe I can have what a couple of people that I liked in meetings had. You know, that sense of safety and security from within. Not with the stuff you have, but from within. I wanted that from some people that had that in meetings. And I thought, you know, that's never going to happen for an alcoholic like me. Nor do I deserve, because of all the things I did as a child, I don't deserve the life that I see people having out here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I kept coming back for my second year. And then I don't know what happened, but all of a sudden I'm 25 years sober. But you know what? I go to lots of meetings. I work the steps. I work the steps. I help other people work the steps. And, you know, there is something to be said for working the steps in order. They're in order, 1 through 12, for a reason. It's a divine order, really. And so I had to learn that when I first got sober, my first couple of years, I wanted to say, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry to you. I'm sorry I broke that promise. I'm sorry I slept with your husband or wife. I'm sorry this. I'm sorry that. I wanted to just go on and just say I'm sorry for living, really. And when my sponsor pointed out that it's unless it will harm them or others, I realized I probably shouldn't make amends yet. Because there's a lot of information I have in my soul that will hurt a lot of others. My brother's a year sober and he has no idea what happened to him as a baby, as an infant, at the hands of his own father. And that's painful. It's painful, and it's not a secret, because look, I just told all you guys. You know? I've told a lot of people. And the bolts of lightning didn't come down, and I was not punished in any way. And I was not killed by the men and women who told me that if I told, I would be killed and my mom would be killed. And countless others, whoever supported me. And I saw people be killed at Whiskey Bill's hands, and I don't know what happened to the bodies. I have no idea, but I know that that's no way for a child to grow up. I know that for sure. And I know I sit in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings with people who have molested their children, grandchildren, nieces, nephews. And I got to sponsor a man who molested his children. He was right out of prison. And I sponsored him for 7 years. And he chose castration, and I went to the hospital with his wife and him, and he had the surgery. And at 7 years sober, he could not refrain, so he killed himself. Some of us don't make it in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some of our ghosts and our secrets kill us, literally kill us. And I've seen that in lots of different ways and over my 25 years of sobriety. And I see people die all the time. This is a killer disease, you guys. If you think you can go out and drink one more time, it might be your one last time. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to risk my life. I love my life today. I have an occupation today. I have my car's registered on time. I have insurance. I'm not running for the law for any reason. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got sober, I would drive up to the noon meeting at the Berkeley Fellowship and the repo guy was after me. And so I, you know, that tow truck knew I was going to that noon meeting at the Berkeley Fellowship every day, and he'd follow me. And some guy, who I don't even know, he could have been somebody who's going to steal my truck, but he would jump in my truck, drive my truck around for an hour during the meeting so I could be in the meeting and be sober. And then he'd drive back up at, you know, 1 o'clock, and I'd jump back in my truck and speed around the streets of Oakland until I could find a place to ditch my truck so he couldn't find it. And, you know, I'd do the same thing over and over. And, you know, that's the running that we do when we're drinking. You know, that's the insanity of alcoholism. And I don't have to do that today. You know, my truck's paid. I pay on time. I pay my bill on time. What a concept. We were constantly being evicted. As children, we were evicted. We slept in our car a lot. We slept at O'Neill Park a lot. We slept under bridges, and we slept in those little things that were, well, the 22 freeway wasn't there then. But there were little parks that we could sleep in when we were homeless, and it's no way for a child to grow up. And I hated my mom because she didn't protect us from that. I hated her. I thought she was just, you know, a loser. My mom has opened up bars at 6 a.m. for most of her life. She's an alcoholic. And she would say she was an alcoholic. And for years, I would go to the bar quarterly, once every 3 months, just because I wanted some connection with this woman I didn't know. And I would go to the bar, and I would call somebody in AA, and I'd say, I'm going in. And so I'd go in, and I'd sit with her for that hour, and I'd have my Diet Coke or whatever, and she'd be getting drunker and drunker in an hour. Imagine that. And she would say, hey, look at me, everybody, in the bar, just a corner bar in the Anaheim, and she'd say, I'm an alcoholic, but my daughter's in recovery, and then she'd want to tell them all about it, you know, behind Coors. And she was proud of that, you know, and she would come see me get my chips, and she would stop drinking for at least 2 hours before the AA meeting when I'd get my annual chips, because she knew it was important to me. She didn't know why, but she knew it was. And she reeked, like, bar. That bar smell, that, ugh. Boy, I just got a memory. Woo! I can smell it. So my mom, you know, kind of lived her life that way, and I didn't want to live like my mom. I didn't want what my mom had, and I didn't know that I could love her like other women alcoholics that I meet in Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know. I thought I had to somewhere in the steps get to the place where I could forgive her. I knew that at some point I had to forgive my perpetrators, all few hundred of them. And I now know that the one that I need to make amends to and the one that I need to admit to is me. And God, and one other person, because that's what it says in the book. So I learned a lot about myself and about my disease and about the whole sex industry thing from this guy who molested his own kids. And I sponsored him for 6 years, and what an amazing man. You know, he wanted to be sober. He wanted to get this thing. He wanted to live, and he wanted to truly make living amends to his children. And nobody that ever did those things to the three of us wanted that, or that I know of. But I wanted that. I wanted that for me, and I wanted that for the memory of my sister who couldn't deal with what happened to us as children, and that's what took her life. She kept drinking on top of medication that she was taking for a fatal disease already. But she still may be here if she hadn't been drinking on top of that medication. And I miss her every day. And I see my friends fighting with their sisters, and I would give anything to have my baby sister back. Anything. So what I give is sobriety. So what I give is I show up for my life, and I love myself to the best of my ability. It took me 10 years of sobriety before I could look in a mirror, because I thought I was so disgusting. I was so dirty and so filthy and so unlovable. Absolutely unlovable for my first 10 years. Nobody, please don't love me. I got into relationships. I got married lots of times. I'm not up there with Liz Taylor yet, but now she's done. I'm not really proud of that, but I have that fear of intimacy. I have a fear of intimacy because I don't know. I just simply don't know. I don't know how to be. I don't know what to do. I'm learning how to communicate openly. And I do that with my friends. I have no business being in a relationship today because I really need to build me. I've always looked for me in a relationship. A relationship with a bottle first, and then a relationship, you know, in conjunction with being in a marriage or a relationship. And, you know, that's not where it's at. It's really from inside out. It's not from the stuff. It's not from who I'm with that I identify with that identifies me. I identify me. You know, being honest, being trustworthy, having integrity. I knew that you would get that from working the steps, but I didn't really know that I would get that. I didn't really know that I deserved that or that I was worthy of that kind of love and that kind of communication and that kind of clarity in my life. I just knew you guys could have it if you worked for them, it says in the promises, if we work for them. And I worked and worked and worked, but I still didn't believe. I didn't believe it would be okay for me one day. And, you know, I don't really know when that moment came, but it was after 10 years of sobriety that when I could kind of look in the mirror, but really all I see is my hair if I'm doing my hair, my teeth if I'm doing my teeth, whatever I'm working on at the minute. And I get out of there as fast as I can. And, you know, I'm sponsoring a gal now, and I said, let's do some mirror work because I need it too. We teach what we need to learn in here. And so we're learning together. It's an adventure, it's a journey, and it's painful. But if we keep it really simple, like really simple, everything has to be simple for the alcoholic because we just make it all big and make it out of size and it just gets all stretched out of, you know, proportion. And today I know that if I keep everything very simple, especially when the going gets rough, and I go back to the 1-2-3 steps, that waltz that I did for a long time, I know that things can get simple. And I keep them small and try to keep them as right-sized as possible. And then I get through to the other side. I don't know how I get to the other side, but I must have been working because everybody else looks great. So I must look great too because I'm doing the work too. But I can't see me. I really can't see me. I can't see the progress that I make. I can see the progress all of you make. It surprises me sometimes when people take 2 or 3 and I'm like, wait, I just met you yesterday. You were a newcomer. You know, and then all of a sudden you're 5 years sober and I'm thinking, and then all of a sudden I'm 25 years sober. How the hell did that happen? It's just one day, 9,137 days. That's it. I just have this day, the same day you guys have. I love my life today. You know, I'm worthy of the job that I have. I've had lots of jobs in sobriety. I've had divorces and I've had deaths. When I got sober in 1986 in Oakland and Berkeley, people were dropping like flies of AIDS. And so I was going to a funeral a week. Talk about grief work. Hell! I barely, you know somebody, when I was in early sobriety, if I knew somebody 3 months, that was a long time. You know, it's like, oh my God, that was my best friend. And people are looking at me like, you've only known him 3 months. I don't know, but we got close, man. And but it feels like that in early sobriety, you know. You're in these sober houses, and it's like, you're tight for life, you know. And then you move out of that sober living, and Joe? Who's that guy? You know, and then you run into him on your first birthday, and it's like, oh, yeah, we got sober together. That meant something to me, you know. I didn't get to get sober in a recovery house. I didn't get the structure. I wanted the structure. But I couldn't get there because I was a single mom on welfare. I couldn't go to rehab. And in the 80s, they didn't have those rehabs that they have now. And I never got to live in a sober living because I had a kid. They didn't have sober living for women with kids. And my daughter was 6 when I got sober, and she's 32 now. And she has 3 kids of her own that have never seen their grandma drink. And my daughter doesn't remember all of that. You know, I tell stories about parking my motorcycle in the living room one night, and she woke me up in the morning. I was totally in a fog and hungover, and she came and asked why my motorcycle was in the front yard or in the front room. And I'm like, come on, Shannon, go get some cereal. And Mommy's tired. And she says, no, really, Mom, the motorcycle's in the living room. I'm like, what? So I get up, staggered out, and my motorcycle was in the living room. I lived in an apartment, you know, with a single door. And I'm looking at the door jamb, and I'm trying to figure out how the hell I got that. That's a blackout, you know. I don't remember driving from Long Beach to Costa Mesa on my motorcycle. I don't remember anything. And I, let alone, remember how that motorcycle got in my living room. I had to take the whole damn front end apart to get it out with a hangover. That's the last thing a guy wants to do with a hangover, right? And, shoot. You know, that's the other thing is that, you know, if you're having situations and problems and conditions where you think that you really need a drink to soften the blow, The only thing that's going to do is you're going to wake up in the morning with that same problem or situation, but you're going to have a headache, a pounding headache. You're going to be either throwing up or throwing things. You're going to have a hangover. It's not going to be good. That problem's still going to be there, and you're going to have a hangover, and it just makes things worse. And so that's why I keep staying. That's why I keep coming back, because I know that the solution is in these rooms. And there are lots of other ways to get sober. There are tons of other ways to get sober. But this is the way that I know. And this is the way that, you know, I have peers in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have people that are just like me. And they're sober over 20 years. And they're strong. And we're in the winner's circle. I would have never, ever dreamed of being in the winner's circle. Ever. Not for somebody like me who was a prostitute, who was worth nothing, who never was going to make a living at anything but that. And I was just going to be that worthless piece of crap. Piece of poop on the bottom of your shoe, and you just keep stepping on me. I'm not that today. They don't get to win. I get to win. My God gets to win. I am the woman that my God wanted me to be today. I don't know when that happened. But it happened. It happened for a drunk like me. It happened for Rita Rose's daughter, who was a barstool alcoholic. I met Paul just a few days after my mom died. And I didn't know what to do, so I went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I listened. I really couldn't speak much, but I made myself speak like a newcomer. And I have this practice of prayer meditation for many, many years. And I'm also a grateful member of Al-Anon. I didn't identify in the beginning because it's part of my story. I wanted to tell it myself. And I have 35 years in Al-Anon. A caseworker, when we were on welfare as a child, took me to an Al-Anon meeting. It's totally against protocol. She probably wasn't supposed to do it. She probably could have lost her job. But I'm pretty sure she was in her 60s when she took me to this meeting, and so she's probably not even alive. But I thank her because it kept me alive. It gave me hope when I thought there was no hope. But I kept drinking because I couldn't not drink. And so about a year before my mom was diagnosed with cancer, I started working the steps around just my family relationships. And my dad had gotten sober by that time, and he realized what had happened to us as kids, and because he didn't know. And that all came out in his rehab. And it was a tough time for us as a family. It was a really tough time. My dad started drinking heavily after my sister died, and we had to raise her two kids. And I hated my mom. I hated my mom. I was 20 years sober, and I hated my mom. And in my prayer meditation, God said, "You'll put everything in storage, and you'll go take care of your mom." And I said, "Like hell I will." I hate that woman. But I had been doing some healing. I had taken some of that layers of that onion that they talk about taking off, and I knew it was true. I knew I was being called. I wasn't being asked to go take care of my mother. I was told that you will go take care of your mother. And I was dropping my mom off at the bar in the morning at 6 so I could go to work. And then I had little time slots for people at the bar and people in AA that came in and did like 4-hour shifts with my mom for the last 7 months she was alive. And I had to come to grips that I had to love that woman because she was dying. She was going to die. So I decided I'd love that woman with God's love and not mine, because I couldn't love her. I was angry and I was hurt. What mother would do that to a child? By the end, I was loving her with my love. She was a woman alcoholic, a daily drinker, that went out knowing love, and only love. The man who beat her for 35 years, my fifth stepdad, came around. They were doing Eskimo kisses in the bar, because that was her life. And they fell in love. And I hated that guy. He molested my sister, and he molested my child. And I hated him. And I had to go side by side with him for 7 months to take care of my mom till she died. And every day I took showers because I felt filthy dirty. And I just, I didn't know how I was going to do it one more time, one more day, one more day, one more day. How long is this going to last, God? One more day. So I was going to meetings. I wasn't drinking in between. I was taking care of my mom. I was going to work. And I had internal bleeding within my own insides, which I still have. So I was taking care of all those things. And I wasn't drinking. Because I was going to meetings and I was plugged in. And I was calling my sponsor every day, which I still do. God bless Jeanette. God bless all those who have sponsored me through my pain and my journey. Because they walked every inch with me. So my mom, she had bladder cancer. Women alcoholics don't always notice when they have bladder cancer because they're drinking. So she didn't notice that she'd been bleeding for probably a couple of years from this bladder cancer. And when I went into her house to move in, I had to clean out bloody clothes and all this. I hated her even more because I had to clean up this mess that stunk. But I loved her at the end. I loved her. Because every woman alcoholic deserves that, whether they're drinking or they're sober. Because all we want is to be loved. That's all we're looking for, is to be loved. And that bottle cannot love us. It's not warm. Well, I guess if you heat it. But, you know, it's not warm and fuzzy and soft like a human being. And staying sober has helped me get next to people. And it doesn't hurt to be hugged. It doesn't hurt to be loved. It doesn't hurt to be admired. What's that? For an alcoholic like me, somebody would admire me? What's that? I found out. Because I stayed long enough to find out for the miracle. They say in Alcoholics Anonymous, don't quit before the miracle. Please don't quit before the miracle. Because the miracle started today, when you woke up, when I woke up. I have the same sobriety as everybody in this room, this day. Because this is the only day I have. I can't breathe in yesterday. I can't breathe in tomorrow, but I can breathe this day. So this is the day I'm in. This is the day I'm sober. This is the day I get to talk to you. This is the day that, you know, I get to tell my truth. And I talk a lot in AA meetings about talking about issues until I'm done talking about them. Not until you're done hearing about them. We get really tired of hearing the same story from the same newcomer who's sleeping with the same other newcomer who's not doing anything but sleeping with the other alcoholics in the rooms. And we just kind of listen. Nobody says, hey, shut up over there. If you hadn't, you know, done this, then you'd be sober. And nobody says that. Nobody says, oh, you drank again? Get the hell out. Nobody says that. We get to stay. We just stay. I've been drunk in meetings and I've been sober in meetings for a long time. I prefer sober. I prefer to not have the hangover. I prefer to not keep racking up the wreckage of my present. Because I did that. I wrecked up the wreckage of my past really well. I don't have to do that today. I'm really glad about that. And that's because of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's because I go to meetings and I do service and I'm present. And I'm conscious. You know, I'm going to say probably for my first 5 years sober, I wasn't able to be conscious. I was too angry. I was pissed off at them. Because if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be alcoholic. And if it wasn't for what you did to me, I wouldn't have this problem. And the truth is I did a lot of things to me. I allowed a lot of things in my life. Granted, I wasn't responsible for that 10 years of my life when other people had control over me. They were shooting us with drugs so that we would be their puppets. And so I was a heroin addict by the time I was 7. I was a full-blown alcoholic and addict by the time I was 7. So what were the odds of me getting sober and having a life beyond my wildest dreams? Not much. Not very good odds. My mom's in the grave, my sister's in the grave, my dad's in the grave, my brother just escaped, you know, the grave because he went to jail and they sobered him up for a while, and I don't know this guy. I don't like this guy. I don't want him to be my brother. I don't anything. And I love him today. He's a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got to go down to wherever he lives, Vista, and give him his 1 year chip in January. That's a miracle. That's a miracle for a guy like my brother. It's the same miracle I get to experience. It's miraculous when a family member of mine says, you know, wow, I got sober. My cousin lives in San Jose. He just took 2 years. Wow. Because all these years, my story has been, I'm the only one in my family in recovery. You know, I didn't quit before the miracle, and now look, there's three of us. And I'm only 51 years old. I have a long life ahead of me, because I'm not killing my organs with alcohol and other things, and people, places, and things. You know, that's my primary addiction, is people, places, and things. That's what got me into Al-Anon, and that's what keeps me in Al-Anon, is because I fall in love with the most angry son of a gun there is in the room. I don't know. You know, my picker's broken. My mom's picker was broken. My picker's broken. My daughter's picker's broken. I hope my grandkids can fix theirs before they get to that period. And I'm really grateful to them. I have a life beyond my wildest dreams. And I get to tell my truth. And I get to enjoy my life. Happy, joyous, and free. That's what I have today. I am free from the bondage of self. Most days. Not every day. Because I still have that bondage. And I still scare myself. When I allowed myself to be a doormat. And one day at a time, I don't want to be a doormat. You know, I want to be in acceptance of who I am right now, right-sized. Not in the grandiose way of, you know, I'm a piece of crap again. Because I go there often. But I pull out a lot earlier than I used to do that. And I'm so grateful that you guys have kept me glued together. You know that nursery rhyme about Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall and all the king's horses and all the king's men couldn't put Humpty together again. And you guys put me back together again. One piece, some are a little crooked. Some, you know, the glue falls out and they got to re-glue me. But I'm pretty put together. I didn't think that could happen for an alcoholic like me. I really thought that I was destined to be like my mom, to have my name on a bar stool, and oh my God, that guy takes my mom's ashes to that bar and drinks with her every day. You know, so my mom's not missing out. You know, he puts a bottle of coarse beer by her ashes and he sits there and drinks for the day. You know, they're still together. I don't want that. You know, I don't want to live like that. You know, I like the happy, joyous, and free that I have. I like the quality of life that I have built through working the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. There is a website to work the 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous in your relationships. I started that about 7 years ago. And it probably was the culmination of me working the steps, being able to work the traditions in my life the same way as we do as a group of Alcoholics Anonymous, that I get to take an inventory of my personal relationships. And I get to find out, you know, where I need to tweak and where I need to, you know, adjust and where I get to experience people differently. Because I have a whole bag of false beliefs about myself and about what you want from me. I always think if you're going to get close to me, you're going to steal something from me. Because I stole a lot from you. And I don't live like that anymore. And I'm letting people get close to me, probably for the first time in my sobriety, just in the last couple of years. It's scary, but I keep it very simple and very small and very manageable, because if it grows too big, it'll be just like a wildfire and I won't know what to do. I'll just get lost and end up drinking again, because that's what happened for those 6 years that I kept drinking. I just got lost and I got out of focus and I couldn't figure out how to get my footing back. And so I drank. And I haven't drank behind a lot of things in 25 years. Lots of deaths, lots of marriages. All three of my grandkids, I saw them born and I love them. I love the innocence of a child that knows how to keep it simple and knows how to keep it innocent. That is what I want. Come to me as a child of God. That's me. That's me. I get to keep it that simple. And my God loves me that much. It's not how big my problems are. It's how big is my God. How big is my God? Is my God going to help me through whatever this insurmountable piece of pain is? Well, so far my God's helped me through a lot of insurmountable pain. Pain that I didn't think I could go through. But I didn't do it alone. I did it with you. I did it with members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon. I walked through every piece of pain, my own and others, my parents. It was hard. It was really hard. But I had to keep it really simple. So if you're new, you just stay. You just stay in these rooms no matter what. If you drink, come back. I hope that if you make a decision today to not drink one day at a time and just keep coming back and don't drink in between the meetings, that you'll have what I have. You'll know peace in the middle of your bones. I know peace in the middle of my soul. And I know today that there's an innocence in my heart and in the middle of my soul that nobody has ever touched without my invitation. I know that for a fact. It's a cellular knowing. I know absolutely that there are parts of me that are only mine and God's, that they don't belong to them. I've created that through the steps. And I know that to be my truth today. So please keep coming back. Thank you for letting me share.